be willing to like take a risk on yourself and on your potential and on your capabilities. And even if you fall a little bit, I think that ultimately you'll end up in a better place for having taken that risk on yourself.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Modern Business Operations. Today, I'm hosting Kevin Keller. Kevin, thank you for joining me today.
Welcome. Thank you.
Kevin, I have a long list of very impressive companies in your resume. I want to hear all about it, but currently is this SVP and General Counsel at Forward Networks. Before that, small startups, but also senior positions in Instacart, Facebook. You also worked at Microsoft. So a lot of kind of things, but I don't want to, you know, kind of steal the story. Maybe we start there. Maybe
we
can share a little bit kind of your journey and then, what you're up to right now.
Yeah. I won't go all the way back to I was born in whatever, although I did grow up in a small town in Idaho. So that's kind of the background. No one in my family had gone to college, let alone grad school. So I was kind of the first there. And I know a lot of people are in that boat too. I got a degree. I really was fascinated by computers. This is in the 80s. Got a degree in electrical engineering. I started in computer science, but then I really wanted to know what was happening inside the computer. And that led me to electrical engineering. And then I made what probably people are like, why did you do this? I pivoted to law. I blame or credit my wife when we got married very young in college. And she came home one night with a sample LSAT as she knew I was trying to consider what to do next and whether to go to business school or engineering grad school or what. She said, anytime you hear something about the law, you have something to say about it. And so maybe this is the thing for you. And I decided I would take a sample LSAT, see how I did. It's very much logic, analytical reasoning, some reading comprehension. I did fine, never seen it again. And I said, okay, this was the whole of my decision. And you don't have to have a path necessarily planned out because my decision was if I take this test and I do well enough to go to a good school, then I'll go to law school. I did okay at the start, but not great. And by the time I graduated, I was getting straight A's in differential equations, all these very complicated classes. And I figured if I go into this new thing, it's not going to be any different. I'm going to have the learning curve at the beginning, and I'm not going to be the best person in my class. I'll do okay by the end. But if that's the case, if I end up middle of my class and I have spent this much money, and it's an inordinate amount of money even back then, but even more so now, will I get a return on that investment? And I decided the only way to be sure about that, assuming that I'd be in the middle of my class, was to go to a top school. So the calculus was, if I do well enough on this test that I can get into a top school, then that will be kind of the deciding factor. And I did. And I was one of a few people, and I think it may be an increasing number of people now, but that had a technical background in law school, a handful of us. At that point, NYU didn't even have an intellectual property law society or a journal or anything like that. That's how it really was. I think Yale or Harvard did. So there was a group of us that started that while I was there, but that's how small of a group and how early it was. It's more prevalent now. I started my career at Wilson Sonsini in Silicon Valley in Palo Alto, kind of known as one of the premier sort of tech law firms, and got to work with a lot of really great startups, just do a ton of work for a wide variety of business models. One of my early clients was Napster, which was completely fun to be involved with their story before they got shut down by the music industry, but just the dynamics and everything. And I'd come out of law school too, in the middle of the dot-com boom. And so there was just a lot of excitement and fervor and everything that was kind of great to be part of. You mentioned some of the bigger companies I've been at. That's where I went after I left Wilson Sonsini. The biggest block of time was at Amazon, where I spent 11 and a half years. And I was the first attorney they hired in the US outside of Seattle. They hired me for Lab 126, which was making the Kindle. So I had a front row seat over those years in the Kindle, the Echo, all the other devices that came out of there. And then also got tapped to be the first attorney on Amazon Go, the Just Walk Out computer vision shopping experience. And then Astra, their home robot that they launched, may still be making for business uses, but not for home use anymore. Just had a great an interesting time there for sure. Yeah, that kind of sums up where I am right now. I'm currently the general counsel of Forward Networks. We do essentially a digital twin for your network. So if you want to know what it looks like, how a packet moves through, where you might have problems in the network, where your software might not be up to date, all that sort of stuff. It's a really incredibly useful tool, especially if you're at the C-suite and you're worried about, hey, we have a data breach, we have a privacy issue. You know, I have to report to authorities and understand what the network's doing and whether we've fixed it or not. It is a really great solution for that sort of problem for C-suite and board members too. So that's, I've been there since January, just sort of getting my arms around the business and the company. But yeah, it's been a great run. And I would say, like, to anybody who's more junior and looks at that and says, how did you plot that out? I didn't. You know, I went to Amazon at the time when they had just come off being called Amazon.com, where AWS was barely a thing. There wasn't even a line item on their reporting. It was 2008. And my friends at Microsoft, I was supporting the Xbox silicon and custom stuff there, were like, what in the world are you doing? You know, working at the company across there that's just an e-commerce company. The lab team was 60 people. The Kindle had barely launched, and I decided to go there because I met the team and I thought, these are fantastic people I'd love to work with. And this is a cool product, and I think there'll be other things, but if there's not, I'll be able to say I got to work with these people on these things. And that's what mattered. And those have been my best career decisions along the way. I've been the ones that looked at, who do I get to work with and what do I get to work on, and not worried about what the future may hold.
Well, congratulations, first of all. Super impressive stuff. I think you were saying you didn't plan it out, which, yeah, I think clearly you didn't plan it out. But I do think there's a very kind of core values or concept, feels like, that you kind of carried with you through all of those decisions, that I do think is actually should be more common. You know, people should be more intentional about some of the things, even all the way back to, like, should I go to law school or not? Do the math, do the ROI.
Yeah.
You know? But then take a bet, which I like a lot too.
It also saves you a lot of angst. And I've got a couple slides that do memes that are in a deck that I share with people when I'm training them how to do some of the stuff I do. And one of them is about just saying F it, you know, like there's a bit of like that. You just have to kind of say, like, I'm just going to roll the dice and go with, I've done a calculation and now I'm going to roll the dice and go with this and see where it takes me. You have to kind of feel comfortable doing. And you'll take some what look like risks from the outside, but you've thought through them and you said, I'll let the cards fall where they will based upon the upfront work I did in deciding to do this or not.
Yeah, it's kind of like actually led me to the next point I wanted to double click on. What a crazy, you know, exciting few decades here in the, you know, in Silicon Valley. And you definitely had a front row for a few of those moments. I guess my kind of like my double click was about to really talk about that, you know, joining something new or, you know, this experience, the one before, it doesn't matter. Like through those years, the ecosystem keeps innovating. There's always new things. But yeah, those fundamental sounds, you know, again, you take them with you. So kind of like where I'm going with this is you're starting a new role. You have a new team. You know, you brought in to bring your expertise, to bring your senior and experience defining or redefining a group. What are the kind of like go-to things? Like, what do you bring with you? You think about how the group operates, how this line of business runs. What do you bring with you immediately?
Yeah, I think whenever you start somewhere new and there are already people there and they've been doing things, I mean, you just generally have to be humble and willing to consider that you don't have all the answers, that you don't have the one fix for everything, and that people may be doing something as they are for a reason. And so you kind of first have to get the lay of the land, I think, in your 30, 60, 90, whatever plan or whatever mentally you do, is to like get the lay of land and understand why things are being done the way they are before you start to then say, well, let's undo this or let's change this. And, you know, you really want to have like a real good map of what's there and then bring sort of those process improvements that make sense to people with data and everything to back up why they possibly could be a good change. Maybe do some A/B testing for them too and suggest ways of getting there by validating that these changes will actually improve things and make things better. So I think that's part of the process. And I think the one big thing, I don't think you can work at Amazon for very long without really becoming a process-driven, analytical mind that looks at everything you do and says, how am I doing this? how could I do it better? Let me iterate and see if I can improve on this. And then you sort of bring that everywhere you go, and which can also be a frustration. I know for those of you out there who are ex-Amazon, it can be like really hard to walk into another organization that is not as focused on continual improvement and process iteration and, you know, COEs. If you get stuck with having to do one, it's painful, but it also is like a really great process for figuring out what the root cause of a problem is and then building a process to avoid that problem in the future. So I think that's a tool set that I take with me now wherever I go, is how do I break this process down? How do I think through it? How do I think about whether there's steps I'm taking that I don't need to or that I can automate and make more efficient?
Yeah, I think I find it super interesting. Facebook has a way of doing things. Microsoft has a way of doing things. Google has a way of doing things. And then obviously Amazon have a very specific way of doing things. Yeah. And one anecdote I know from one that I think about and use sometime too is, you know, you write the press release before you kind of like start with like those tools. It's kind of where I was trying to go with it, and you already kind of touched it, but a lot of those tools can only work when all of the other tools are implemented.
Yeah.
And they really define a structure and ecosystem almost.
Yeah.
A bio ecosystem type of thing where you kind of die if you go out of that. Or if you bring it to a different place, it will die. Any of those was successful, like the COE, for example, did you try it in other places and were successful with, or any other example?
Yeah, I think people do have that sort of root cause analysis in other places. It may not be called a correction of errors. It may not have quite the structure. And you're right, like some of these things you can't really piecemeal. They all sort of fit together in a whole. And even people who've left Amazon and started their own companies and taken some of it with them don't necessarily implement all of it together, but some of it that works together. Yeah, COE is just said it's sort of painful because, you know, you go through the process asking the five whys to get down to the root cause. And sometimes the last answer is why is that you flubbed up. Okay, what do I do to prevent that? What information did I need? What process would have helped me get to the right answer? And then putting that in place. And the really great thing is that at Amazon, at least, you do that root cause and it's completely fine to like end up with the failure was me and for this reason, and then have a process. And taking ownership for the decision that you made and for the outcome is something that the leaders there do, and I think is a healthy thing for any organization to do. Take ownership. Don't punish people for taking ownership of mistakes. The only way you were going to be exited from Amazon if you were the root cause of a COE, a problem that rose to the level that Jeff or somebody asked for one, is if you didn't then, one, accept ownership for it, and two, suggest and implement a process. If you hadn't implemented the process, you're like, here's a great idea, but you didn't actually follow through, that's problematic. But even if your process, your improvement suggestion in your process, the failure happened again, but in a different way, or the process didn't work, that's fine. You iterate on the process. And that sort of healthy iteration on trying to find a solution, and not just for yourself, how can I apply this process across the organization so that nobody else has this same problem across the organization? And sharing out those learnings across the organization is incredibly healthy. And that's definitely something I took away. And the companies do, other companies do have a form of this. But I think the institutional position of this isn't personal, we reward people who take ownership and improve process and don't punish them for that, frees you up to really self-evaluate. Is it my team? Is it me that is the problem? What should I fix? Can I fix? And you have to like really take ego out of it, but it allows you the space to do that. And I think that's healthy. And if I could replicate anything anywhere, it would be kind of that sort of mindset about it's okay, we're all human. We make mistakes. It's what you do after you make the mistake, after you find out a process isn't working, that really, really matters in the long haul.
Absolutely. It's fascinated me, those topics, you know, where obviously Apple kind of went to my head when you were talking and some of the fundamentals there, or the fact that OKRs and stuff like that comes originally from Google. What's fascinating to me is that it took like a good 20 years, if not more, for sort of like defining of different org structures, philosophy of, you know, methodologies of how we do things. And a lot of it, I think, changed dramatically, or like the last 20 odd years, when the kind of like internet became more prevalent and, you know, access to information, the value of accessing to information, right? And you can see it like even in like law firms or whatnot, or look, you know, other industries, that complexity of a knowledge worker organization and the boom of that is really only in the last kind of like 30, you know, ish years. And so what's interesting to me is that a lot of those methodologies were sort of like built in the in that kind of 20 odd years. And then in the matter of like 5 years, or, you know, maybe one decade, you can claim that we went from like all of that to then COVID forcing, okay, how does change in the remote world versus not, right? The famous sort of like Steve Jobs building it around, like, because he, I don't think he lived to see it, but he kind of like really wanted that sort of flow of the ring that you always kind of gonna see people from other departments and kind of like in the water cooler and all that stuff. That doesn't, it's just not valid on a remote environment. Like, it's again, a lot of companies are hybrid and like coming back to work is to office is happening for sure. But it's just, I find it super interesting. And you're not even get to go too deep into that of like what's working, what's not working, how do we kind of create more repeatable standards. And then like AI is knocking on the door, right? Of like, and you're like, okay, what do I do then? You know, how does that change things? How do you think about those things? Obviously, you know, maybe one of your previous positions was in an AI startup, obviously, but like now live it, like, oh, we all live it, right? And kind of where does it, you know, but how do you think about those stuff?
Yeah, I feel I got really lucky, you know, and again, luck, because I think a lot of like people who claim a lot of credit for their career, there is some. I mean, I can't say I didn't work hard along the way and I didn't like put in the effort and time and everything, but there is a factor of luck. And part of that, you know, luck was like deciding like to take the risk on Amazon when I did. And it put me in like a seat where I was advising on machine learning and AI stuff back as early as 2008, 2010, as we were introducing predictive algorithm stuff in the Silk browser, which was a browser we made for the first Fire tablet that we launched. And having to think about how that predictive stuff would play out, how it actually works and everything. So I kind of got a head start in thinking about how these things impact people, the computer vision stuff in Amazon Go, home robotics, and like having a thing rolling around your house that listens and sees everything and, you know, and also has security and safety and other issues, really put me at a place to really think through a lot of this stuff. I think back to the sort of COVID and the work, I think there's two forces that are interesting. You know, Google and others formed, and this was at the very beginning of my career. A lot of my colleagues actually went as first in-house attorneys to Google, and a lot of other people joined, and it grew over time. And then you reach a point where now you have a diaspora. You have a diaspora of people from Google, Amazon, and these other companies who have spent years and years absorbing the culture and developing process and everything, and now they're sharing it out. So you have OKRs that now are a thing across most, you know, a lot of companies and driven by people probably who had that experience at Google. On the legal side, Google was, I think, some of the team that I knew from Wilson Sonsini that went over to Google when asked what they should be called because they sat next to the product teams and they advised the product teams. They called themselves product counsel. And then that's now become a thing out there. You'll hear somebody's like a product counsel, which is kind of like a mini GC. So these sort of ideas like sort of, you know, permeate throughout as there's a diaspora of people moving through these different companies, which is really interesting sort of proliferation of the ideas and seeding across everything. It was interesting. COVID was interesting because I had made the case a long time, you know, at Amazon that there were people on my team that like lived in the city and would have to commute down. And I'd say, well, can we let them work remotely one day a week or 2 days a week? And I think initially the reaction was, well, how will you know that they're working, that they're getting stuff done? And I explained, like, how do I know now, right? I'm not walking behind people's desks looking over their shoulder. What I'm looking at is output and analyzing, like, the work that we have to do, understanding how much time it typically takes, the process used, and then is something lagging because I know about how much time it should take. And then that gives me signal. And I already had this signal to be able to apply when we went to the remote world to understand these things take about this much time and be able to adjust, keep people on track and then build out processes. How do I do check-ins differently so that I can keep track of things so that we have some clear way of tracking. AI in some ways turns that on its head, at least for remote. You don't know, like there's no sort of level setting yet on how much time it takes to do some things, because some of them are sped up a lot by AI and some of them aren't. But at the end of the day, I think even AI, like a lot of the value add and a lot of the things that you bring to the table are that process-driven mentality of spending the time and the effort to break out, what exactly do I do to accomplish this thing? We do a lot of things in our head. We have a lot of processes and things we just do automatically, especially someone who's been long in their career. You can then start to say, okay, let me break that process down and figure out how I would accomplish parts of this process with AI and shrink down the time. But there's no universal way to say like, hey, I've got this job for this person on my team that's remote. This much of it should be shrunk down by exactly this much by AI, because we're all still sort of working through the part of breaking down the process and figuring out where to apply it the best places to shrink the time.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin is the operating system for business operations, providing businesses with the building blocks to orchestrate any process with no code or change management required. Contact us at tonkin.com to learn how you can build complex processes fast.
And I do think it, like if you take your ROI analysis sort of like you did early on, I think that is where like I find is the simplest framework. Yeah. On both situations, on both the changes that come with remote work and the changes that came with AI. I think the struggle is, and this is kind of where I spend time thinking about it, is it's faster than where it moves fast. Like the optionality moves faster than you can, than most people or anyone can digest. You do some analysis, be like, should I, you know, how do I have this challenge or this opportunity? And you know, how do I invest in solving it? Maybe I hire a couple of people here. Maybe we use a couple of technology here. Maybe we kind of build a process to help that.
Yeah.
And most people obviously that have done anything similar knows that you really start with, okay, what is my limitations? Do I have a time limitation? Do I have a budget limitation? Do I have a skill limitation? Like what are the limitations? And even when you think about AI, you kind of look at what you have right now, your cost of it, the ability of it, ability for people to accept it. And you look 3 months back, it was different. And three months before that, it was different, but not slightly different, like significantly different.
Radically different.
Something that will cost you $1,000 now will cost you $10. Something that will take you, you know, a month to just train data and whatnot, now it's just out of the box because it doesn't matter. You know, something that you'll be like, oh, I can't find people that know how to do that. You'll be like, actually, I don't need them to do that anymore. I just need them now to be able to do something else. It's fascinating. It's fascinating. Yeah. So I like the iterative approach here as well. But yeah, like, I don't know, Kios, maybe we kind of close that topic, you know, starting in a new place relatively recently. How do you guys think about leveraging AI? Like, is that like second or third in priority, or is that number one in priority? Like, how do you guys think about you kind of involve that?
We just had a leadership offsite last month, and I and one of the other team were tasked with this topic, like how do we leverage it, right? Because there is definitely a deep interest in finding ways to increase efficiency so that people have the highest impact. And so it starts with just breaking down what are all the processes that each different department has and where, you know, could we use this to find efficiencies? And that's best done by the people who actually do the process and do the work. And so I can suggest, and I actually am doing the presentation, a follow-on presentation this afternoon, I can suggest areas and areas for improvement. I can go and look and find places that other companies are doing it and finding gains and everything. But at the end of the day, it's looking at your own processes and breaking them down. In terms of keeping up with all this, when I hire people, I try to, now that once I got to the GC role, I get to set like kind of how I hire people, which is fantastic. I always Amazon's process is really good, but it was really highly focused on credentials. Did you go to a top school? Did you work at a top firm and all this? I try to focus on, is someone intelligent? Do they have emotional intelligence? And are they curious? Because one of the ways to keep up with all this is just remain curious. And it used to be, I could go and spend 15 minutes in the morning looking through various tech blogs and people think, well, why is an attorney doing that? Well, a lot of times when I'm approached with a new product, you know, who walked in the door and said, we're going to make this device, this system that monitors every moment of somebody being in a store and like takes camera angles from all these different and uses all these sensors. How do you even start to break down and think about those problems? Well, if you're thinking about and watching all the different things that other companies are doing, maybe not even in your space, the problems they're running into, the legal challenges they're running into, the speculation about things, then it primes your mind to be ready when someone walks in the door with something new for you to think through what the possible ramifications are of that. And I used to be able to do that, like I said, in 15, 20 minutes of like, I hit these sites, I look at this news, I dig a little here. Now it's happening so fast. Yeah, I mean, almost I use AI to keep up on AI. And I think for those people who really want to be like the most informed, I think these days you have to be actually using it. Maybe even like, I mean, I'm probably an edge case in that I'm building with it too. And I've kind of rekindled my 30-year-old. The last time I coded before was assembly code for DSP chips, you know, a little bit of that stuff my senior year of college. So very dated skills, but I've kind of brushed them up. And that's one of the benefits of the last place I was at. I was sitting there with R&D people in the AI space, and every other Slack message was, did you see this Arvix paper? Did you see this? Hey, what about this? And so it just mentally caught me up to like the cutting edge. That team was like, they made AI agents a year that were functional and operative before Anthropic or OpenAI announced computer use. They had it working and working really well. The team's now at Amazon and cramming out with some cool stuff. But setting with that group and seeing the pace at which they were trying to keep up with the current, you know, just sort of lit a fire under me to try to do the same. And then lit the other fire of like, hey, maybe I can start to like, I knew all along I could probably learn, you know, modern languages and decode, you know, would have taken me time. I would have had to do a lot of research. I would have had to just start from scratch. But AI definitely has got me up the curve where I'm building things and learning things at a much rapid pace. So I think you have to like use the tools at your disposal, and that includes AI now, to keep up with the pace of how fast it's moving.
Well, I agree with everything you said. And I also agree with your philosophy on hiring, but I think the word curious is probably going to be the word of the decade. I think everyone understands what it means to work with someone that is smart versus and someone that is emotionally smart and kind. Like that is clear. But the funny thing is, to be really intelligent, you have to be curious.
Yeah.
To be really emotionally intelligent, you also have to be curious.
Yeah.
You have to care enough to learn what the other person cares about and why are they behaving the way they behave. You have to care enough about how things work in order to actually understand them in a deeper level that gives you an edge, you know. And I think you are absolutely right. I think there is two interesting, but on a personal level, in my company, I'm like, you know, people are confusing sometimes things, you know, like how they feel about X, for example.
Yeah.
Because how they feel politically about things. I was like, I don't even care. I do not care about what you think about anything else. If you want to stay on top of what's going on and you don't have a list of things you're watching in X, you're a week behind. And a week is a long time, especially if you play in the space. That's the first thing. Second thing I would recommend actually people to listen to Toby. I don't know if you saw it, like the CEO, founder of Spotify, had an email to the company and ended up posting it on X. And essentially you're saying like, this is not a recommendation anymore. Like the TLDR of it, this is not a recommendation. This is not like a bonus or giving you leg up. This is requirement. And if you're not using AI, if you don't know how to use AI, if you're not, you know, in so many words, not curious about, you're essentially on your way out, whether you know it or not.
Yeah.
I don't want to hire anyone before you showed me that you can show me how AI can do it. And like sometimes those feel extreme, especially you know, the newsletters and media, they like to kind of look sometimes on the on the negative side of it. But in reality, it is a wake-up call. If you are asleep right now and you're not, you know, even at least curious to learn how to use it, then you might not be a good fit anymore.
Yeah. I tell people when I started at Amazon, you know, and I think this is true of maybe other G&A functions too, legal was a bit of a black box, right? we did things, and once we got all too busy and we couldn't get all the things done, then you made a request for headcount, right? And it wasn't very driven by any sort of data or metrics or anything like that. And I think, you know, now when you hear from the Spotify CEO, that really is forcing people to open up the box and say, okay, what are we doing? How are we doing it? How much time does it take to do these different parts of the task? Is there a way to break it down into subparts? Is there a way? And so over time, what you saw at Amazon as I got there initially is like, we're busy. Then we thought, well, is this part of the task? Do we need this level of headcount for it? Do we need to hire an attorney for this? Or could this be a contracts manager or other legal professional? And you sort of saw over time the progression to breaking down tasks and assigning them to the right level person and putting the right dollar value on how much, you know, it was worth in terms of people time. And now I think you're even breaking down further and saying, within the realm of the role that we've got for this particular person who's very efficient, is there a way to make that more efficient or make them more efficient with AI in a way that, you know, helps us, you know, keep costs down? It's not about like getting rid of people. It's like, how can we, you know, keep a lower cost structure for the business as we grow the company? Ideally, you're in a company that's growing, and it's really about how can we continue to grow and continue this growth curve without having to add new people to it, without overly stressing the people we have. But it's requiring them to be intellectually curious about their own processes and dive into what they're doing, break it out. I really think that that's where a lot of the value now, we talk about data having a lot of value at the edge of the network, but what really hasn't been absorbed by an OpenAI or Anthropic, and I don't think can, you know, are those processes that are unique to a business and unique to a particular profession, how they're done and broken down and can be streamlined. AI can't look at that job and say, here's how you do it, because it doesn't know all the steps involved, all the mental processes involved. That takes the person at the edge who's curious, willing to dive into their own process, break it down, and then figure out how to streamline it as much as possible.
Yeah, people tend to forget very quickly that LLMs and even agents and anything else, but people too, by the way, when you hire a person, as good as the prompt you give them, is as good as the question you're asking, you'll get, you know, mediocre respond or mediocre execution of a task for a person if you give a mediocre definition of what it is that you're asking them to do. Yeah. Now, a strong AI model or a strong person might do more than what you ask for without you needing to ask for it. That is always true. And a bad one will do less. But the better you become at asking it. So, and that's where process comes in. That's where curiosity comes in. That's where you can improve that. That's fantastic. You know, I have to go back and kind of like, maybe we can wrap up with that. Go back to all of this and ask, what is the one shared advice to all of it that you maybe got? We kind of talk a lot of practical things today. So there's a lot of great stuff people can take, but you know, something on a personal level that you feel like, you know, you'll tell kids or just folks that are starting that kind of worth bringing forward.
Yeah. I mean, one, and I'll say a couple of them. One, I was at Berkeley Law a few months back and speaking to the new, soon to be new attorneys there. And I told them, look, I'm very jealous in some ways of you, right? You were coming out, like I came out in the .com days, and there's so much excitement. It was so much potential and everything. It's even more now. The possibilities for your careers are nearly endless at this point. If you're curious, if you're diving into this stuff, it can feel a little scary. I mean, think about the .com days, like what everything was in flux. Like there were new jobs being created, old things being wiped out. Like just, there's a lot of flux. There's even more so now. So it's exciting. And if you look at it as exciting and you dive into it, and I think it's fantastic. I think the other piece, you know, and I don't know that anyone necessarily said directly to me, focus on who you get to work with and what you get to do. But that's kind of been, you know, something I've either picked up partially from people saying it and along the way. And, you know, and part of it too is you decide to leave places too, based on kind of the same sort of mentality of, if I were to start my own thing, my own company, I am the CEO, I am the company. Do I want to work on these things? Do I want to work with these people? And if the answer is no, then you probably ought to be looking for the exit and finding something different to work on, because where you're fascinated, where you're enthused, where you're excited, that's where you're going to bring your best person, your best self, and you're going to dive into the problems and you're going to be engaged in a way that makes you and where you're at successful. So it's, you know, be asking yourself that and be willing to take a risk on yourself and on your potential and on your capabilities. Even if you fall a little bit, I think that ultimately you'll end up in a better place for having taken that risk on yourself.
100%. Well, Kevin, that was a blast. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time. If someone want to reach out, is that LinkedIn, X, where do you end?
Yeah, happy to take in anyone who wants to reach out, especially if you are a first generation college or law student or anything like that. Like, I wish it existed when I was there. I always try to make time in my week to do coffee with or spend some time with someone like that, help them think through, you know, their path, but also just hear from them. I get a lot out of listening to people who are at that stage of their career and learning from them as well. It's a two-way street. And I think that whenever you have a conversation with anyone, I think there's something to be learned. And I would actually encourage people who are further along in their career, that mentoring, that connection with people who are just starting keeps you fresh, keeps you understanding your team better, who might be a mix of different generations. So that's my advice as somebody who's a little further along in their career is don't lose touch with that group of people who are starting or in the middle of their career.
It's a quick look into the future.
Yeah.
I love it.
Exactly.
Kevin, thank you so much. That was a blast.
Yeah, thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned on today's episode at tonkin.com/MBOpod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on the latest in business operations technology, head over to tonkin.com.